Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts. The sound of endurance racing
around the world.
This is RS1, part of the Radio Show Limited Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of On the Grid. Thank you for joining us. Big show coming up your way. No time for news, apart from a chat between Tom Arciulli, of course, the Doric guy, and Will Davison coming up in just a sec. We'll also catch up with Tim Blanchard. Big weekend for him. Not only is he running a V8 supercar race team out at Wigan, he'll also be running his Formula Ford as well. He will be running it, which is some great stuff for Tim. And also, we'll have a chat about what happened last weekend at the Bathurst 12-hour and what's coming up this weekend at Winton for the Super Sprint. All that to come right here on the grid.
Round 5 of the 2022 Repco Supercars Championship heads to Winton this weekend, and joining me is a man that sits third in the championship, Mr. Will Davison. Hello, Willie.
Howdy, Tommy.
So it finally happened, mate. The race you've waited for since 2016, you got that W. How are you feeling?
Feeling good. I mean, it's certainly nice regardless, just to get a win in the bank. Very quickly moved on, which is good. You know, that is our mindset, and it's what I've been saying all along, being in positions to win consistently, which we've been doing. And now we've got it. So now we just focus on getting more of them, and continuing what we're doing. Our expectations are high that we're putting on ourselves. So it's good that I feel like, we're back in that zone. You know, I've got that belief in everything we're doing. And, it's a really, really cool way to go racing. So, no, I'm not going carried away with the big win. Nice feeling. It's what we should be doing. It's what we should be aspiring to doing every weekend. And we just get on with the year now and the progression that we're, we're sort of trajectory that we're on and the progression we're making. So, bit of a controversial way to do it, but, nonetheless, I think we deserved it.
Yeah, you must be the only person of all time who have won two races without crossing the finish line first.
Whatever. It is annoying. I don't think that's good for anyone, but I tell you, there's been God knows how many race wins over the years where, you know, the car in front may have got a penalty and served it in some other way, and no one's ever questioned it. So at the end of the day, penalties are penalties, whether it's post-race or in-race. So it is. I think it takes the shine off a bit for everyone, but no one questions anyone else's wins if, you know, someone in front of them's crashed or, you know, done something in the lane and got a penalty, or it doesn't take the shine off their wins. So I think it's sucks a bit, but end of the day, it doesn't matter. We did a good job. We just focus on the job we did and the race we performed, and that's all you can do. All the other stuff's just noise and wah-wah. So, I feel like we performed well, and hey, we got the trophy.
Yeah, that's right. So you've been on a pretty strong run, 4 podiums in the last 5 starts. Do you believe you're now maximising performances as a team?
Yeah, I think we're always striving for more. Just sometimes we say less and do more. And, ultimately we're always working really hard in the background. And, people often say you're settling for second, or that's not true at all. We say less. There's if you don't win, there's no point carrying on about it. We just work hard behind the scenes to make progress with our package. Always on myself. You're always downplaying it, but we're always striving and living and breathing how to be better. As a driver, that never ends. So, I'm digging deep to be better. Rich and I and the whole team are really, gelling well. I think we've certainly unlocked a few more things since last year, second year working together. So it's good that we've been able to do that, but that's got to keep going. We still clearly need a little bit more performance, particularly in the race trim. But yeah, I think the way we're able to get the most out of our car, you know, so far in all the qualifying sessions, I think is a real credit to the team, you know, and the way we're understanding each other. And yeah, we'll just keep trying to understand what we need to be a little bit better in the races. But yeah, we've got some things we're working on, and hopefully we can just keep up, you know, keep up what we're doing. And yeah, who knows what's possible for the rest of the year.
And finally, Winton this weekend, first time again to another track since 2019. What are your thoughts heading to Winton Raceway this weekend?
Yeah, looking forward to the challenge. Yeah, certainly going there, having not driven there for 3 years, there's been some, you know, small modifications to the circuit at turn 3 and 4 and a change in the curb profiles. So we haven't had the ability to see that. Obviously, all the Victorians have been testing there the last couple of years. You know, T8 got a rookie day there last week and had a look at it. So, yeah, we certainly go there not quite as prepared as some, and with a two-day format, two 30-minute sessions, you know, it will be challenging, but I think we're all excited by that challenge. We're not shying away from it. It's if anything, it's gives you a little bit of extra motivation to go onto their home turf and you know, really back ourselves and our homework and our preparation and you know, see if we can, you know, still get our car to the top. So, yeah, confident, you know, we'll be able to get on it pretty quick. You know, I think the team's always had a pretty good package around there. And, you know, I sort of like Winton as well. So a bit of catching up to do in a short space Saturday morning. That'll be the challenge. But two 30-minute sessions, I reckon we can get on top of it for when it counts come qualifying time. So looking forward to keeping up our good work. You know, we've had 6 podiums this year, certainly another 2 or 3 that have gone missing, you know. So, yeah, the form's good, and we've just got to really got to keep it up. So bring it on.
All right, thanks, Billy. All the best this weekend. We'll see you out there.
All right, joining me as he always does off the top of the program, Richard Quayle. Mate, first of all, congratulations. A fantastic call to you and your team across the 12-hour at Bathurst.
Thank you, Shebex. Appreciate that. Still pretty tired, won't lie, but it was a tremendous weekend on the mountain and lots to unpick. We'll debrief Australia's International Enduro a little bit later on the show, but I'm looking forward to getting stuck into a discussion with our first guest, Shebex, because not only is it looking to the future with a up-and-coming supercars team, but this weekend at Winton, looking to the past a little bit as well.
Yes, back to the future, you could say, Quailsy, to an extent. Tim Blanchard joins us, of course, owner and team principal of Cool Drive Racing, and a man that's going to be driving a Formula Ford at Winton this weekend. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on board. Double duties. Tell us about this craziness.
Yeah, well, yeah, it is craziness. That's a very good way to put it. yeah, so Formula Ford's always been a category that I've, you know, myself and my family have had a long association with. And this weekend, the Formula Ford category is racing at the Supercars, which it's only an event there this year. And obviously, I won the championship in 2007, and my brother's been racing Formula Ford with Sonic this year in the States Series, and he was looking to race at Winton, and he decided to go on a holiday, and so I swooped on his car to have a crack at the national round. Thought I'm there anyway, and yeah, it's a great opportunity to jump back in a Formula Ford, which I love driving, and to work with Michael and Maria again at Sonic Motor Racing is, I'm really looking forward to it.
Category close to your heart, I know, Tim. So go back to 2007. Let's talk about your championship year and some of the people you built. So you beat Ash Walsh, good driver, James Moffat, Christian Limbom was there, Nick Percat was there, Taz Douglas, Brad Lowe, the list goes on. It was a very competitive year. What stands out from the 07 championship in your mind?
Yeah, well, it was obviously a very good year for me. I enjoyed it a lot. But, yeah, funnily enough, the Winton round was a standout for us that year. We qualified on pole and won all 3 races. And James Morph and Ash Walsh were probably our main 2 championship rivals. They both had a few issues that weekend. That weekend really set up our championship campaign. But yeah, I think the last round at Phillip Island was probably one of the ones that I enjoyed the most, because the pressure of the championship was off, and the last kind of two or three races at Phillip Island was just a really good, fun race with Moff and Walshy went wheel to wheel, and Lee changed multiple times every lap. That was just good, fun racing like Formula Ford is.
In regards to the car that you're racing, it's a throwback to the year. It looks identical, doesn't it?
Yeah. So Maria rang me a few weeks ago and said, what livery should we put on? What do you want on there? And I kind of thought about it for a little bit. I thought, it'd be cool to do the 2007 livery and throwback. So we did that. Look, I think the car looks fantastic. I even found my old race suit from 2007 and surprisingly still fit in it. So either I must have been really unfit when I was 19 or whatever I was.
Tim, there's a great young field in Formula Ford at the moment, and I think that was testament to the racing that we saw at Phillip Island in their last round. Have you had a chance to sort of see who's in the field, and are you looking forward to coming up against the young kids?
Yeah, absolutely. So, racing, my brother's been doing a bit of Formula Ford in the State Series and the Sandown National round at the beginning of the year. So I've been watching a little bit of it, and it's always fantastic racing, like Formula Ford always is, like I mentioned. To be honest, I'm not across, I don't know them that well, but it'll be a good opportunity to get to know some of the kids in Formula Ford a lot better this weekend. And we did a test day up at Winton last week and got to meet my two Sonic teammates for this weekend, which was good. And having a bit of a chat to them about the car and how they drive it was, really, really good fun.
How fundamental was Formula Ford to your career, mate, and that development pathway that it's been a staple of for so long?
Oh, absolutely vital. It set my career up and many others. I think when you look at the list of supercar drivers, not many haven't done Formula Ford. And you look at the guys that won the Formula Ford Championship, most of them have gone on to have successful racing careers in whatever they've pursued. So I think it's a great category. It's a shame it's not big on the world scale anymore, but still quite strong in Australia, which is great to see. And I think it just teaches you a lot about, car control and the mechanical side of how to set up a car, no real aero on it. And they're still reasonably fast cars. So I think from a learning and development category, they're still probably the best category for your career.
And you're full-time team owner, part-time racing car driver now. So how much did you learn from Mick and Maria from a team owner's point of view? Because Sonic is famous for being arguably the best team in Australia for young drivers to go to earn their stripes. So have you taken anything out of the Sonic model that you can bring into Blanchard Racing Team? Was there anything that you've drawn on having driven for them in the past?
Yeah, absolutely. Their roll call of drivers is extremely impressive, and they run a very tight ship and do things extremely professionally. So, and obviously Tim Slade drove for Sonic quite a lot as well. He was actually my mechanic on my car in 2007 when I won the championship. So I've got him on the spanners on Friday this weekend because they're not on track on Friday. So he's helping it with getting the band back together. But it's one of the things when we first started BRT and Slady signed on, and we said all we need to do is just make a V8 supercar version of Sonic. So that's kind of the way we approached it initially, and it seems to be going all right so far. But working with Mick Maria again is fantastic. Mick does a fantastic job in teaching young kids how they need to go about their racing, not just putting them in the car, letting them drive, teaching them how to drive it properly, how to set it up, how to deal with all the pressures outside of it, the mental side of it. And so it's an all-round education, which I think is really important in a young driver's career. And, he's very tough, but that's the sort of mentality you need if you're going to make a career out of being a race car driver. You need to learn how to deal with that pressure, and Mick does a great job of teaching kids for that.
Crazy, I don't know whether you know it or not, but Tim's association with On The Grid is probably the longest association of anyone with this program. We followed Tim's career when he went over to England, and we would speak to him on a regular basis after racing over there. And I'd like to think, Tim, that it helped you in maybe getting you to where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. That was another year in Formula Ford, but yeah, racing over in the UK, that was a lot of fun. Serious racing over there, guys from all around the world racing the Formula Ford Championship in the UK. But yeah, again, it's just a good category to learn and develop in, and that's why I spent another year in the UK continuing that development in Formula Ford. And yeah, as you mentioned, Tony, one of the highlights of the year was getting a phone call from you about 10, 11 o'clock every Sunday night, or I think it was, to recap the weekend's racing.
That was heaps of fun. And, well, we won't recap the racing for this weekend because it hasn't started yet, but let's have a look forward to it. How's the team looking V8 supercar-wise?
Yeah, they're going all right. We had probably a bit of an average weekend in Perth. We just struggled for pace for whatever reason. We haven't really got our finger on it, but we had a bit of a test day. We've thrown a bit of stuff at it, and we kind of slowly working away at it. So, you know, Winton, everyone tests, or most teams test there, so it's always a bit of a lottery, I think. But, who knows what the weather's going to do. Hopefully it's a bit of fun, good weekend for us.
But, Tim, it must be a sign of how far the team's come, given that an ordinary weekend for you is 13th, 13th and 10th, and you're still 9th in the championship. So, I mean, that's not a bad position to be in when that kind of a weekend in this kind of a supercar field, as good as it is an off weekend for you.
Yeah, we do have to put it in perspective sometimes. Remember, it's our second year in the series. But, you know, I guess coming off the Grand Prix weekend where we finished third for the weekend, we were kind of on a bit of a high, and like this sport does, it takes you back to reality very quickly. So we are here at a zero very quickly there, but that's this sport. But, you know, it wasn't a great weekend pace-wise, but we still kind of, you know, 2 13ths and a 10th is not a terrible weekend. And so I'm glad that we were able to at least get something out of the weekend and minimise the damage, I guess, and we didn't have the outright car pace.
And last one for me. Now, I don't know if you've locked in a co-driver for Slater yet or whether you plan to drive again, but how many phone calls do you think you're going to get after this weekend if some of these young Formula Ford juniors beat a supercar team owner? They will all be on the phone, you realise, going, hey, how about an enduro drive, mate? Come on.
Yeah, well, there's a fair incentive there for me to go well this weekend, isn't it? If I win it, I don't think I'll get any phone calls on Monday. If I finish 10th, I'll get 9 phone calls on Monday. So every car I pass is one less phone call I'm going to answer on Monday, I reckon.
Hey, Tim, great news on the weather front as well. 17 and 18 degrees Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and sunny. 3 degrees of a night, so it's going to be bloody cold, but it'll be. Who would have thought you had to go to Winton in the middle of winter to actually get warm weather?
Yeah, I know. Unbelievable. Yeah, well, hopefully the rain stays away. But, yeah, it's always cold up there this time of year. But, it's always a terrific event, Winton. You get the hardcore race fans there, and everyone's very passionate and love their racing. So it's probably not our biggest and most glamorous event, but I think it's always a fun event to go to.
Mate, really appreciate your time. Thank you for that. Good luck this weekend, Formula Fords. Look forward to seeing you up there at Winton on the weekend.
Yeah, thank you. Looking forward to it. Hopefully we have a good weekend.
All right, Crosby, we've got the band back together for this weekend to have a look at what happened last weekend. Look forward, of course, to Winton this weekend. Mark Walker, g'day to you.
Hello, Tony Shebeki. Hello, Richard Crail. It's good to hear your voice again. I mean, we heard an awful, awful lot. 17 hours worth of it over the weekend.
Sorry.
Not enough. No, it was just enough. Doing my job.
Never enough. And Tomar Chuli, g'day to you.
Hey, Shebex. Hey, boys. How are we?
Good. Hashtag Doric Guy joins us as well to wrap up what's been a great weekend of racing up at Bathurst. There's no doubting that at all. The time change and all that sort of stuff just seemed to spice it up just that little bit more with the rain that we got on the Sunday and the like. And we'll go back to before the race, Mark Walker, first of all, though.
I was going to say, the rain. What the hell was the go with that? Who on earth has ever seen a foggy start break out into a beautiful rainy day? That's not a thing that happens, is it?
Yeah.
Mm. It was weird. It was weird, weird weather. And when I got to the track at what was 20-4, and I'm here to tell you right now, that is really early.
In the morning.
In the morning.
Why'd you leave?
Hey?
Why did you leave the night before?
God, you pay for a hotel room. You feel like you need to get some value out of it. And then I didn't have beer at the racetrack. So I needed one Saturday night before I went to bed. Yeah, it was a strange morning because when we drove into the track, it was fine. It was clear. You could see the stars in the sky. And then as we got a bit closer to the start of the race, sort of a bit of mist came down and we thought, it just sort of feels a bit like light rain and up towards the mountain it looked like it. Down the bottom was fine. And then sort of half an hour before, this fog just rolled in straight away. It was really, really strange. And just an obscure, typical day of Bathurst weather. What was amazing was I don't remember a race where, certainly not a 12-hour, and it's been a while since we've had a 1,000 like it, where it's rained quite a lot, dried, and got completely dry, but then done exactly the same thing again later on. It was quite surprising how that all played out over the course of the day. And yeah, it definitely added another dimension to it all.
Certainly did. An amazing lap by Chaz on Saturday to take pole position.
Yeah, what did you think about quali, boys? So I'm interested to get your feedback because it was a last-minute change. And ultimately, what we got was a better session than I think we would have had we rolled with the shootout, because the biggest issue that we'd faced all weekend was tyre warm-up. And basically, an outlap was A, extremely sketchy, and B, it would have meant that pole was probably going to be at 207.5 because you just could not generate tyre temperature. What we got in the end was a really good battle for pole. It quite literally a shootout between Kelvin Vanderlinde and Chazzy Mostert. So I'm interested to know what you guys thought and whether that maybe should be something we do at the 12-hour moving forward full-time just to give a bit more of a point of difference from October.
No. I understand that it was done for the right reasons, and the reasons behind it were all sound, and I don't have a problem with that, with the unique situation that this event was in May with the smaller car count than usual. You know, top 10 shootouts at Bathurst are awesome. You know, you make that top 10 shootout, all the focus is on you for that one lap. You know, you're getting all the TV time and the attention, and it's all on the line if you can pull one out of the hat. Where you got absolutely kissed on Saturday was Chaz's third sector. There was ridiculous. Like, where did that come from? It was nowhere in the first two sectors, and then bang, pulls out a pole, and that absolutely saved it. So it turned out all right on the night, but I hope in future they have a top 10 shootout.
Yeah, I think next year, boys, when we've got the full complement of cars back, definitely return to a shootout, because a GT3 shootout with those cars, something to see, that's for sure.
Can we just send them around for a couple of warm-up laps instead, Richard?
Well, February
and then send them off for one lap. So, like, do two warm-up laps and then.
Yeah, well,
I still know the tyres won't be up to temperature.
Doesn't work for TV, but I mean, February next year it'll be a million degrees again, so it probably won't be as much of an issue. I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I thought I loved the way it built and built and built, and it built towards the final after the final siren. Basically, the biggest irony of quali was that it got Audi in massive strife. And there were seriously angry people down with the four rings on their shirt with how that played out, because it didn't really need to happen between Chaz and Vanderlinde. You know, they were 6 tenths quicker than Ricardo Fella and then Jules Gounon in the first of the Mercs. But what it did was get them a balance of performance adjustment. So they copped 15 kilos of weight, and it certainly didn't change Sunday for Audi. They lost that car race, but you never want to go into a race having to carry 15 more kilos than you did the day before. So, yeah, I thought that was really, really interesting.
On Audi, they dropped it, didn't they? I mean, that was ridiculous that we put on the race talk the top 10 things to look at. Number 2.2 was the driver time for the AMs. Like, if a noob like me can decipher the rules adequately like that and put it on a website, copy and paste, surely the biggest team in the race should have been able to figure that one out, but they didn't do it once. They did it twice, and that cost them a win, because Vanderlinde was absolutely on fire. That was so cool. I mean, that whole race, I enjoyed it because you're engaged the whole time. You didn't know what was coming. Even at the end, when they weren't necessarily all together on the track, they were still banging out those lap times. I watched all 12 hours of it, except for 5 minutes of it when I was doing the gardening and found a wasp nest and absolutely got eaten alive by wasps. So there's 5 minutes when I was rolling around the ground. No. So I hope nothing really good happened in that 5 minutes, Rich, about halfway through.
It was fascinating, and it played out differently to how I expected. There were more safety cars in the first half than I thought there'd be, which we were slightly concerned about. I'm not going to lie to you, with a 20-car field, there was sort of a thought of going, oh my God, how many cars we're going to lose, especially when we lost out of realistic contention, the Chazzy car and the Tony Bates car, for example, and you know, even cars that probably weren't going to win, but could have been really solid, like the Ram Motorsport entry and the Valmont Racing car, the two Mercs. But that last, I don't think anyone expected that last quarter of the race to run under green, which it did. It was 3 hours of green flag running at the end. So it went in the first 8 hours to being a really typical Bathurst Enduro. Lots of safety car restarts, a couple of good long runs where the strategy can play out, but where you knew that there'd be a safety car to pull things back. And it turned from that into a traditional European endurance race where they just run flat out as hard as they possibly can. And it became probably a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? Cerebral than outright thriller. But I really enjoyed the way it played out. And it was a privilege to see Jules Gounon and Mauro Engel doing what they were doing at the end. And not everyone's will have liked that finish. Everyone would have liked, I'm sure some people would have liked to have seen the door-banging Bathurst finale. But for someone who's seen a lot of those races, to see those two guys who are among the best GT racers in the world punching out the lap times they were after 10, 11 hours of car racing was awesome. And they were driving those cars as hard as they could be driven. And I think the only disappointment for mine was that Audi stuffed their strategy so badly that Kelvin Vandalinde wasn't in that mix. Because the Mercs weren't as fast, but I guarantee you they would have become very difficult to pass had he come ranging up behind them in car 74. So that's probably the only disappointment I've got from the end of that race. Otherwise, I thought it was a really cool shootout between two unbelievably good drivers.
Joe, I tell you what, you're hard to please, aren't you? If the race has gone for 12 hours and there's a 9-second margin between first and second.
Yeah, Shebex. But, you know, you reading some of the comments, some of the, especially on the supercars pages, it's... you know, they forget when their heroes Lowndes and Wincup won in 2017, it was by a full lap. So, you know, people are hard to please. But anyway, I thought it was good.
What do we think about this craft bamboo strategy at the start of the race where they just stopped for like every single time they could? Like, Krause, like as a 12-hour aficionado, can you explain what that was all about and what the advantage was?
It was genius. That's what it was. And it had us completely befuddled. I will have a point and not wanting to give ourselves a pat on the back too much, but I'll give Chad Nailon a pat on the back because he and I talked about the driver time thing with Brad Schumacher about 15 minutes before it all came to a head. So if Audi was actually watching the TV coverage, they would have known that they were in strife. So whether they knew they were in strife or not, I don't know, but we called it before it happened. The craft bamboo thing was really interesting. So the regulation stated that your two-minute compulsory pit stop, you can take one under safety car, but you could only take one every given safety car. So what they did was the moment the race went green again is they peeled back into pit lane and took another one. So essentially what they were doing was dropping to the back of the lead lap, but they were bowling over two compulsory pit stops for every one safety car. And because we had quite a lot of safety car at the start of the race, it worked for them. So what it meant was by the end of hour four, so little more than a quarter of the way into the race, they had ticked off every single compulsory pit stop box they needed. So they could just, every pit stop from there on in was as short as you could possibly make it. So it gave them an enormous amount of flexibility. And if you work it out, so by the time they'd completed nine stops, most other teams had completed four just because of all the safety car. So the difference between a CPS and a non-CPS is somewhere about 30 seconds. So they were five compulsory pit stops in front. That 2.5 minutes they saved later in the race that they gave away earlier on. So it was genius. It was 100%. Now, in some races, it won't work. In the 2020 Bathurst 12-hour, it probably wouldn't have worked as a strategy, but just the way the race played out, really, really canny thing to do. And they knew they had the car speed and the driving talent to drive around it. So well played them. That was a new strategy we've never seen at Mount Panorama before. And I really liked it. Well done.
They were leading at 3 hour mark after 12 pit stops.
Yes.
Yeah. After 3 hours and all that rubbish. And you gave him a shout out in the later part of the telecast, Shane Fowler was the refueler there, friend of the racetalk.com. And he was actually on the message to me early in the race. I'm like, dude, don't you have a car to refuel? He's got a bit on. A few other little takeaways. I love the broadcast. Obviously, Chad was great. Matt, yourself, Garth Tander. Wowee. I mean, he lost his voice, but I love his insight, his knowledge and his passion and the fact that he's articulate and can string words together, which I clearly can't. But, you know, he's got the technical knowledge. He builds cars himself. He knows how the GT3 cars are put together. Like when the coin spot Audi came into the pits with those gearbox troubles, he knew exactly what was going on. He's going, well, that's going to be a long stop if it's have to replace that particular part on the car. So that was good. And you go going back to the end of the race when they were banging out those lap times and right on board with one of the cars, and like, oh, he was flat through Reed Park there. And you can tell that he was genuinely impressed that, you know, from the driving perspective that he brought that to the telecast. Another one to the side of that, how on earth do you follow all the strategy plays in the race? Peeking behind the curtain here, have you got little helpers?
That's
have
a
you
good
got a
call.
Spreadsheet? Have good you got question. A piece of paper? Because I'm sitting there at home and you're so on top of all these things that are happening. You have a guest up in the box. You have Brock Feeney up there and he's like, so what are you doing next, Brock? And you're like, I don't know. I'm just the driver. And so, well, this is what you're going to be doing next, Brock. I thought that was great.
I picked that one like a dirty nose as well. I'm not going to lie to you. I said, well, I reckon Shane Van Gisbergen and Strott going to jump back in and then you, and then you'll put your arm in for one more stint and then you'll go to the end. And he was like, I don't know. And that's exactly what they did. No, look, I one of the things I'm good at, I think, in life is reading a car race. So I love unpicking that strategy, and there's some software we use which helps, but lots of notes, and I burned through about 6 pages of a notebook, but I love it. And to full credit, like Chad is as good as anybody at that as well from the pit lane side of things. And we often talk off air on the back channels during the race to have a bit of a discussion about what we think people are doing and when they're going to stop. And then we translate that into the tech center or our discussions we have throughout the race. So, but I love it. I genuinely love, and this year gave us heaps of challenges with the new rules and the driver time stuff, and calculating who had driver time left that they needed to tick off. And this was the Brad Schumacher scenario. Like when he jumped out of the car, we're like, oh, really awkward that he's got to do 80 minutes of driving. They're probably going to pit 90 minutes before he has to get out of the car, and you've got to do that hour after the second half of the race in hour 7. And I really love watching all that play out. That's where I'm a massive nerd, I suppose, but you know, that's how I roll.
Another one that we picked before the race was the AM pace, and I think it wasn't that big an issue during the race except for maybe Triple Eight. And it was something that you brought up. It was as if they were protecting the Prince from some of the worst conditions in the first half, and they had to sort of overload him in the back. Do you think that cost them in the final rundown?
No, I don't think it cost them. I don't think they would have been any higher up had they run it differently, because they just did not have the car speed. Yeah, they were not fast enough, which is very strange, especially given what the sister car was doing with Jules Gounon behind the wheel. So that surprised me. They had peak one-lap pace. So on any given lap, one at a time, Shane could go with the cars around him in that end sort of shootout with Mauro Engel, but he couldn't match them over a long run, which was very surprising for mine. And it's another story where T8 have been close but not quite close enough at Bathurst in terms of car speed. And if you go back over the last couple of years where Triple Eight's cars have finished, they've been third or fourth, basically. They've been very, very close, but they haven't had that last little half a percent of raw speed that ultimately you need to win the car race. I agree. I thought they were protecting Prince Geoffrey a little bit, and the crash he had earlier in the weekend when he came off the road at turn 2, nerfed the thing into the barriers, and they missed most of practice 3. In fact, they missed all of practice 3. It was on his outlap, and all of practice 4. I think that really hurt them. It put them behind the eight ball, and it probably dampened Prince Geoffrey's confidence as well, and it would take a long time for him to get back. And we saw the same thing with BRM when Mark Rosser crashed their car on Saturday, And I spoke to Mark after the race, and he said, mate, it shot my confidence to pieces, because that was the last time I drove the car. The next time I jumped into the car, we were leading after what Nick Percat and Joey Mawson had done at the start. So he said it took me ages to build my confidence back after that. It's a massive thing for the AM driver in that race. So, yeah, it was really interesting. They just weren't quite there. But Triple Eight were very satisfied, and they played a big role in Sun Energy One Racing's victory, and Kenny and their guys producing what they did at the end.
Before we move on to Winton this weekend, is that Kenny Herbul story, the Peter Brock? I wasn't fully aware of the depth of that Peter Brock story, the fact that Brocky took him in as a young kid and the like. It was just amazing.
It's a great tale. It genuinely is. And the passion that Kenny has for Mount Panorama is as genuine as I've ever seen anyone have feeling for that place. And you know, the four of us all desperately love Bathurst, and Craig Lowndes desperately loves Bathurst and things like that. And Kenny is right up there in terms of the raw emotion that that place generates for him. And having won it, I half expect him to go, I'm not going to drive ever again because this is peak. And he didn't say that because I suspect he'll keep racing. But I was half expecting that at the end of the race. And his half a Woody comment was outstanding. And just, I bumped into him. I made a tactical withdrawal very early, but we had a quiet little team TV debrief at the Ox upstairs on Sunday night. And just as I decided to leave, Kenny and his cadre walked in.
Yeah.
They were going to have a very, very good night. We left,
they got the Uber down from 505 Conrod Street.
Yeah. So we made a technical decision to withdraw there, to save ourselves for the remainder of the year. But
he's not real good at safety car restarts, though, is he?
No. He made some errors, and he was pretty brutal on himself about that in the press conference after the race. Owned him 100%. But that's where I like the four driver option for them, because they could split their minimum driver time for the AM drivers between two of them. And Martin Conrad did a superb job. He was very, very good. And then anchored by Lucas Stolz, who did almost 5 hours in that car. And Jules Gounon, who was magnificent as always. He's just awesome to watch drive racing cars. And he gets it too. I don't know if you heard the quote at the end, but he said, I had some jet lag. I was sitting in the bath reading the book of the Peter Brock. And I loved that. That was just great. So he's another international driver that truly gets the importance and the majesty of Mount Panorama.
I love Winton, but I don't know how you follow a Bathurst 12-hour with a Winton Super Sprint. There's got to be a week's break, doesn't there, surely?
Over to you guys.
And can we talk about Perth for a sec as well? Like, yeah, I was on after Perth because, as you all mentioned, I was in seat 1A flying home after Perth. But I must say, as the hashtag Doric guy, watching Will Davison win his first race in 2016, I did have a tear in my eye and I did cry like a baby.
Oh.
But it's amazing. Like, I've known Will and sponsored Will since 2011. I haven't seen him win a race live since Townsville 2013.
Wow.
So I missed 2016 Bathurst because I was overseas. So it was pretty emotional to see that victory and just the relief on the guy's face. And I'm now glad that that's happened. And now his eyes forward on the next challenge, which is this weekend in Winton.
Mm. So was it monkey off the back stuff for him, Tom?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think it's just all media talk. You know, Will Davison lives racing. It's a racing family. His brother drives with him at Bathurst, is a racing driver, drove for the 12-hour. Alex, his dad's a racer. His whole family, grandfather, they're just a family of racers. He lives and breathes motorsport. And, you know, that winning is all that matters to him. And to finally get that going again, I think watch out for the rest of the season.
It's not a bad track for the old Dick Johnson Racing there at Winton. They've won more races there than anyone. And sort of since the Car of the Future platform came in 2013, it's been a bit of a home ground heroes down there. The Victorian teams have done very well. But four of the last six races have been won by Scott McLaughlin. So that team knows, you know, whether that's the Scott McLaughlin factor, if any of that can bleed over from 2019, because we've missed the last 2 years. I mean, at least this year, the race isn't going to get cancelled 2 days before the event. So that's going to be a positive, isn't it? it hasn't been a Triple Eight track. You know, they've only had one win in this current era car, and that was Van Giz. That's his only win in all the races that he's had there. So, you know, that team have got to work it out. You know, there's been 40 races since 2013, and they've finished 16 of them outside the top 10. It's not a good track for them. So it's an opportunity here if someone wants to step up. But then again, this season, the way it's gone, it doesn't matter what the stats say. You know, SVG can roll out there and bang in another race win.
Yeah, you're right. And like, remember, like the old days of 2013, 14, Car of the Future, when, you know, Jamie used to dominate and he'd turn up at Winton and be like 20th. Like, you just have a shocker. But I think, as you're right, Marco, I think this weekend, you know, it's Shane again, but can, you know, DJR qualify up the front? And can there be enough cars in between him and Shane and them and Shane to make sure that the race victory can happen? Because that's really what happened at race two at Barbagallo. You know, they got enough cars in between Shane to get away from him and get the victory.
It's a comment on how Triple Eight's Winton form, or lack thereof, that since 2013, Erebus Motorsports Mercedes supercar has won as many races as Triple Eight has at the venue. That's not good for Triple Eight, PS. And just on the...
Nismo's won more.
Well, yeah, exactly right. And so is Brad Jones Racing, like three times as more, which is just remarkable. And just one comment, Tom, on the Perth thing. If you social that you're in seat 1A, it's going to get brought up. Just FYI, it will get discussed.
I did not social it. I sent you that in a text message. That was a private conversation. That was not social.
No, that's definitely not private when you're in business class. I'm sorry.
That's social.
That's fair game. Class is open slither, my friend.
In my defense, it was a free upgrade that I didn't pay for. So
it was just charm. It was sorry, guy, charm.
I'd like to believe that what it is people know who Doric Guy is. And I genuinely was asked by several people on the weekend where Doric Guy was on the Bathurst 12-hour grid.
Where was he?
He was at home looking after his brother's child that was sick. So I was doing the family duties. It's been a good bloke. But, like, you know, I'll be back at Winton.
Couldn't see him in the fog anyway. I'm blown away. When that fog was there, I'm like, well, this is going to be a good 3 hours of filler here for my Sunday morning. But it's like, all right, lights out in the safety. Are you kidding?
Yeah,
that was real. And you look at some. Sorry, I'm going back to the 12-hour. Sorry, Winton, but that foggy start. You look at some of the videos from Punterville, and it's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Anyway,
it might
snow this weekend at Winton. We don't know.
Well, that'd be new, wouldn't it?
Well, no, but the weather's saying sunshine and 17 to 19 degrees every day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Well, it could snow overnight, though. It's getting to a low of 2 or 3 every night.
I mean, they bowled a wide at Winton, so I mean, I can't see why they can't bugger it up at Bathurst. So every chance I can stuff it up for this. Isn't the opening of the snow season?
Yes.
Queen's birthday the weekend after, I think.
Okay.
Cool. Close enough. Generally means there's snow on the ground somewhere within an hour's drive of Winton, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, yes, I'll be up there for an AMRS round on that weekend.
Ah.
So very much looking forward to getting snowed in at Winton.
Best wishes. I'll jump in here. I have Winton is a round that has always felt very tenuous on the calendar in recent times. I've got genuine concerns that this could be the last time we go there. There's been some serious reshuffling behind the scenes at the Benalla Auto Club and the AASA, in which they're heavily involved in, and we saw the cancellation or strange sort of scenarios with a bunch of the AMRS categories going over to the Bend to run under Motorsport Australia. And it's all been a little bit strange there. So I hope that those changes behind the scenes aren't hurting the relationship between the BAC and supercars. Because this round survives a lot on the fact that the Victorian government gets behind it with Victorian regional government money so to promote tourism in the regions, which is very important, which is what Tail and Bend gets, and it's what Simmons Plains gets as well down in Tassie. But I think there's a lot of calendar pressure at the moment, and there's a lot of events. There's probably too many races on the calendar, especially with Adelaide coming back, for circuits that there are, and pressure for Phillip Island to return, things like that. So I'm interested to see how how it plays out and whether Winton gets a future. You'd love to see an announcement this weekend going, yep, we're coming back here for a long term.
It's the sort of event that has yo-yoed on and off the calendar ever since 1985. It missed 87. It's missed 2005. It only got back on in 2006 because China got cancelled. It's one of those events that's always sort of been on the fringe. If something's going to cop the chop, it seems to be Winton. So, yeah, hopefully we enjoy it for what it is this weekend. And, it, you know, it's one of the two events in the calendar that has camping. I mean, it's surprising that more events don't embrace that sort of thing because it's a good revenue stream. They're charging $160 a pop for a campsite. So there'd have to be some decent wedge in it for them doing it that way.
Good good support category as well, Porsche Carrera Cup. On the category, Formula Fords, the National Sports Sedans as well are on the cards. Not bad at all. And super, and V8 Utes, are they?
Yeah.
Aussie racing cars.
And Aussie racing cars.
And Aussie racing cars. My Lord.
It could be a pretty... It's actually a decent... It's a very decent race
meeting. Both Utes and Aussie racing cars. Yeah.
Aussie racing cars are at Bathurst, though.
Yeah, no, they just race every weekend, mate. Yeah. They're at the Superbikes at Wakefield as well.
Yeah. They were, yeah. Wow.
40-round calendar.
Yeah. It's like NASCAR. But that's a good support program, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's, I mean, that from an on-all track point fantastic. Of view, that's great.
That actually could be one of the biggest support programs of the year.
Well, yeah, I think it might, actually might be. Carrera Cup's going to be interesting around there. 30 Carrera Cup cars. Amazing. At that place. How does that play out?
How are the radiators on them? There's a bit of nose to tail.
Yeah, they're still susceptible to being smashed, so it hasn't changed.
When was the last time, Richard? 2018, was it?
No, 16.
13.
Nick Percat was in Carrera Cup last time they raced at Winton.
Wow.
I like the stat that there were more from the first time that they raced at Winton when Tony Quinn and Rodney Jane,
yes,
et cetera, were in it than they were in it last time.
Yeah, correct. It's a Arcrail original stat, that.
Thank you.
Yeah. We had a chat to Tim Blanchard. Of course, he'll be racing Formula Ford, and that promises to be good. National Sports Sedan Series. Todd Kelly's young lad is racing there, and he's a debut race, so that's going to be great to see him.
What's he driving, Shebexter?
Sorry, mate?
What's he driving?
A car.
Cool.
Let me tell you, Mark, you have a chat about it.
He actually got up for a podium at Phillip Island in the state championship round in the Hyundai XL Universal Championships there in the weekend. So young Mace is doing a good job.
Yes.
Tony's still running some
Through the scrunchie.
I'm trying to find it somewhere.
Great to have Formula 4 back, and we did hear from Tim Blanchard, though. I love seeing them back at a supercar round. It just feels right, doesn't it, Tom, seeing those cars at a main game event with a bunch of young superstar drivers. And anyone that saw Formula 4 at Phillip Island at the Shannons round earlier this year, I mean, it's one of the best car races that's happened in 2022 so far. So I'm really looking forward to seeing them go at it this weekend.
Well, it's such a lifeblood of Australian motorsport. So many of the current supercar drivers have come through Formula Ford. And, you know, I think, you know, that there could be potentially some prices on offer for a supercar drive or something like that for a Formula Ford winner. So, you know, it's a natural move still from Formula Fords in Australia to supercars.
That's with Dick Johnson Racing, I believe, isn't it? Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, that is correct. Yeah.
How are you going there, Shebex? Any
Mark, a Mark car, Mazda 3.
Oh, good. Right. Excellent.
Oh, what a car, that Mazda 3.
Not a lot of Mazda 3 in a Mark car, though, is there?
No. Badge?
No, yeah. Suppose.
And that's it.
I had to go back to the 12-hour again. Didn't Jake Camilleri do a grouse job to put his thing up in a P2? If that stayed wet the whole way.
Yeah, they could have won the race. Seriously, they could have contended for an outright podium. Those things were unbelievably good in the wet, and the benchmark lap time goes out the window. They don't have to worry about it. Mm. So no, he drove superbly well. Did the Queensland car dealer Grand Prix Master? Good to see.
Last couple of things to look at, boys, before we say goodbye. Indy cars on the weekend. We're racing this week. They're racing this weekend, aren't they?
No, they raced last weekend. Indy GP. Keep up.
Yeah, very rude that they put it on at the exact same time as the 12-hour started.
Yeah.
So, Richard, you watched the Indy cars clearly?
No, well, I'm not going to confirm nor deny that we may have had a small window open on a screen from a network that certainly wasn't covering the 12-hour.
That you still work for, invoice.
Just keeping an eye on the on who was going well in the IndyCar race. You know, an IndyCar stat I love about this season is that Will Power has finished no higher than third in the five IndyCar races so far, but he's finished no lower than fourth either. So, and he currently leads the IndyCar Championship.
That Will Power or Will Davison?
Well, no, Will Power.
Oh, yeah, right.
How's the consistency?
Run a bit of Will consistency there. That's good.
Correct. Which is great. So he leads the championship. Scotty McLaughlin clinging on to the second. Colton Herter got his first win of the season with a few bold little strategy changes. I did watch this race. Yeah, crazy weather.
What about the save, though? What about the Colton Herter?
How good was that
save?
Bit of car control?
Yeah. Oh, that was amazing, wasn't it?
That looked like it hurt. That would have been wrist injuries right there.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a bit of spring back in that.
Yeah.
Can I say that Shane Van Gisbergen would have watched that and thought, I wish that was me.
Oh, he might have.
He would have loved that.
Yeah. Yep. Entirely. I'd like to see him have a crack in an IndyCar because I seem to think he'd go quite well. And it gives someone else a chance to win more races here. But entertaining race. They move into the month of May now with qualifying weekend for the 500 this weekend and then the Indianapolis 500-mile race the weekend after. So looking forward to that. Great to see Hunter McElroy, Tommy, on the podium in Indy Lights for the first time this season. Been a really challenging start to the year for our young mate, but really superb drive. And to get his first podium at the Speedway is pretty special.
Yeah, the kid is full of ambition and he's still disappointed with his weekend finishing second and sixth. So, you know, he's still got he's a 21-year-old rookie. You know, he's so young and still learning his craft. And that Indy Lights series is full of international drivers. There's so many drivers from all across Europe and North America, and obviously Hunter's from here. So it's such a variety of different countries and drivers, and that's provided some great racing and some really talented kids on the way through to whatever open wheel formula they end up in.
I mean, he's second of the rookies this year, so I think he's seventh in the points. Mm-hmm. And there's only been four events and two of them were on the weekend. You know, the first two were a bit of a blowout, but still plenty of time for him to get his stuff together, which he clearly is.
I love the fact the second race on the weekend was held in two parts and ultimately took 6 hours to complete just due to weather and all sorts of chaos going on there.
Another race that was on at like the same time as a 12-hour. So I had the 12-hour on the TV and had Hunter's race on at the same time at like 8:30 on Sunday morning. It's great.
Man. Good man. That's what
beautiful
we want.
Stuff. All right, boys. See you all at Winton.
Do we pick a winner? Or do we just accept and move on that it's going to be Shane Van Gisbergen?
No, not at all. Let's not do that.
No, what about a wild card? Pick
Cam
a wild
Waters.
Card.
Cam Waters.
That's a wild card.
Yeah, I actually like that.
Yep. Yeah, all right, you want a wild card? Andre Heimgartner.
Oh.
Macaulay Jones.
But no, let's have a sensible wild card, shall we?
He was
Brad
pretty
Jones Racing
last
have
time.
Won three races at Winton Motor Raceway in the last 7 years. They always go well there.
Can I say Nick Percat?
Sure. Well, it's going to be an up round for Walkinshaw.
That's right. Chaz is going to absolutely sweep it. Yeah. Actually, Chaz is, I think he's got equal most poles, or he's right up there in poles, so he can qualify well there, which is half the drama at Winton. So if we have good Walkinshaw this weekend, he'll be in the conversation.
And I think
I love that run down to turn one at Winton, especially with these things.
There's always a bit of energy in it because it tends to decide the motor race more often than not at that place.
Yeah. Correct. All right, guys. See you all up there in a couple of days' time.
Thank you, boys.
We'll see you on the grid again very shortly.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at radiolemans.com.